Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Back to Past, the Alternate History Podcast. I'm Nick, but in this episode today, we are going to be talking about probably one of the most interesting foreign policy scenarios we've had yet. What if Japan had to be invaded? And so I'm going to bring it over to Rohan for some context here.
Hey, Nick, thanks for that. So today we're going to be talking about the impacts and ramifications if Operation Downfall occurred, and specifically more about the fact that Japan would be split into two, North Japan and South Japan. So, why did Operation Downfall not happen in our timeline? Well, when we dropped the atomic weapon on Japan, Japan ended up unconditionally surrendering, kind of getting rid of the need for us to invade Japan in the first place, because this plan right here was estimated to cost over 1 million plus American lives and millions more of Japanese lives, both civilian and military lives. So, it would have been really costly on both sides, and both sides knew that as well. So, the atomic bombs essentially helped stop this bloody invasion. But now without the atomic bombs, Operation Downfall would have to occur. And it'd probably take a few years, but eventually the end result would be a Soviet North and an American South.
So, in what context? So, how do you want to start off first?
So, my question is, right off the bat, what would happen to Korea? Would it fall under Soviet hands or would it be split?
It's going to be under Soviet hands here. So if we're going to look at the situation, right, in 1945 when Russia is obligated to invade Korea and Manchuria as a result of the conference at Yalta conference. Here, right? Yep, the conference at Yalta in February of 1945. Stalin is made responsible effectively to invade Japan by summer, if I'm correct, or he was given around 90 days to start the invasion, which kind of fell right in line with what he actually did. And so we saw in this timeline, for example, the return of South Sakhalin. The return of South Sakhalin. And also we also saw a changing of borders in a sense where Red China, or the People's Republic of China now, was given Manchuria, and North Korea was given North Korea. However, in this scenario, I do think that the CCP would still win the Chinese Civil War regardless, perhaps maybe even quicker than this scenario, especially because of nationalist China's, corruptness and military brutality in a sense, because they were a military dictatorship even in Taiwan until I believe the 1980s off the top of my head. Now, I could be wrong with the exact numbers, but they were a military dictatorship from when Chiang Kai-shek first went back to Taiwan and then till his death, and then even part of his son's lifetime as well, where he was the ruler of Taiwan. But to answer your question, though, I think North Korea would be just Korea in this scenario, but a communist Korea under Kim Il-sung, of course, mainly because I don't see the Americans even having a chance of landing in Korea. Maybe they capture Jeju, which is the island off of South Korea, like to the south of it. Maybe at most that's what they might capture, but I don't see anything else happening there.
Okay, so at this point, the whole Korean Peninsula is now under Soviet hands, and the Soviet sphere of influence is, you know, spreading deeper into Asia than it did in our timeline, because now they have northern Japan, they have Korea, China falls within 4 to 5 years earlier than our timeline point is. And the world is looking really grim for the United States, because they're losing the Cold War already. I mean, it hasn't even started and they're losing, if you get what I mean. So, do you think that Congress would try to push for a more aggressive stance, you know, adopt containment right away and try securing those states like South Japan, for example? Would the United States try to start securing states throughout the world, and especially Asia now, you know, to prevent the spread of communism? I mean, I know I think the Berlin airlift and the blockade would still happen, for example, and the seizure of Czechoslovakia with the mysterious murder of the leader there. So I think the affairs in Europe would still remain the same, but I think the United States would also put more focus on Asia. So do you think that the United States would be more aggressive in Asia than they were, you know, like try to maybe even fund democratic revolutions in communist states now, for example, instead of the Soviets, you know, funding communist revolutions in non-communist states?
So let me ask you a quick question here.
Yeah. Sure.
Do you think the United States never did that already?
Well, I think we did, but it wasn't to the same extent as what I'm proposing. What I'm saying is, like, for example, like in Korea, right? We just,
throw money and arms into Korea, for example.
Okay, yeah, well that makes
sense. Not like Afghanistan, right? But like in existing communist states.
Well, I mean, the only difference was really, in a sense, is we put in the guns and arms into Korea mainly because of the fact is that it was more so a UN effort, because it was really what you failed to mention there is really just a UN effort. I mean, yeah, it was a majority American, right? But it was still a UN effort organized by like 29 different countries. However, it's kind of interesting here, because if we're going to go with a direct containment policy, containment in that sense is more so just containing communism. So I feel as if the United States would probably play a more active role in terms of diplomacy.
Yeah, I think containment might have been the wrong word, but I think it would have been containment, but with a more of an offensive strategy rather than a defensive, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't feel confident about that one in a sense. I feel as if I don't know. I don't think we'd see a really as heavily as containment in a sense, because I think it was be more so as containment was. It was more so defensive, because when you're looking at the containment, I feel like you were stating that it'd be more offensive, but it really wasn't never really as offensive as you might be thinking it was. It was more so defensive. It was 100% more defensive. And overall, I don't know if we would see a more aggressive containment. I think we'd see a similar containment, but it'd be more focused on areas such as Japan instead of Korea and Vietnam.
So what you're saying is the United States would the U.S. public would just be more determined to defend the lands that they have left, per se, in their eyes?
I think they were already pretty determined already, especially with the fact there was a lot of
monks. Right, but psychologically, like they're losing the war that just started, right? Because Korea's gone. I mean, they never got Korea, but the Soviets are just spreading their boots across the continent.
I think when you look at it, I think the idea of a Cold War doesn't really come into fashion until, say, the later 40s, like 1947, 1948. I mean, that's why, for example, we saw Taft-Hartley adopt the communist affidavit, in a sense, where you had to sign an affidavit with the government to say, or union leaders had to sign an affidavit with the government to say they wouldn't be communist, which was later overturned. And I don't remember what court decision it was, but it was basically where it's against freedom of association, in a sense. See, I don't know if we would be more determined in a sense. I thought we were already pretty determined, in my opinion, at least. I mean, I think we could potentially see more of a Republican Party I'd say more so like internationalist foreign policy, in a sense. I mean, we see, for example, Republicans in 52 would call Democrats soft on communism, in a sense. And this was rhetoric actually used during the time period, like during our actual history. And I think it would be even used more to a certain extent, because we could say, because they could maybe say, Truman was the one who lost Korea and China, because in a sense, I mean, he would have in this scenario. Under Truman's direction, they would have lost Korea at first in 1945, 1946, and also China in 1946 as well. Not 1946, I'm sorry. Maybe I would say 1948 in this scenario instead of 1949. And we also can't forget about the fact that in this scenario, we'd probably be having a couple hundred thousand more dead Americans in World War II. Maybe up to 1 million, as per expectations, because from the Pentagon, I believe. I don't know if it's from the Pentagon, but it was more so. But in a sense, I think we would have a couple hundred thousand, at least a couple hundred thousand more dead Americans with the invasion of Japan, even surpassing 1 million perhaps in Japan itself, along with millions of dead Japanese. So I feel like even that would be a huge impact. So it's interesting, because then I think we should kind of pull into domestic policy perhaps a little more so. Might maybe the election in 1948-52 here.
So with 48, I feel the Republican Party is going to have, you know, a good lead compared to like what it was in 40. Because although the Republican Party was polled to win on election night, Truman came way ahead. But I think in this timeline, I think the Republicans actually would win. And despite the fact that it's Dewey, which is he's known not really as well of a globalist or an internationalist, I still think that the Republican Party would win, because in the people's eyes, per se, the Democrats lost Korea and China, as Nick said earlier.
Yeah, as China would have been lost in this timeline by 1948, I would say, at this opinion. So you think that still in 1948, Republicans would still vote Dewey or put Dewey in for the nomination?
So to answer your question, I mean, I feel like the two possible candidates would be Dewey or Taft, because they both have, you know, their name, especially Taft, because by this time the Taft-Hartley Pact has also passed.
Act.
Oh my God. By this time the Taft-Hartley Act has also passed, and that, you know, was passing to that act helped essentially calm, you know, the fear of unions with all their mass strikes. So Taft has some good words with the American public, and the Republican Party, I feel like, would use it.
Well, I think in this sense also, I feel as if in this scenario, especially with if we're going with the scenario where Japan is invaded, right? I feel as if maybe America would definitely be a little bit more war weary in this scenario, for sure. It might be a little bit not much more, but a little bit more hesitant to just send their sons off the war, if you get what I mean here.
Right.
So I mean, I mean the liberal establishment during this time period with the Republican Party at least was more of the internationalist wing. I mean, we even saw more moderate Republicans such as Arthur Vandenberg swing towards the internationalist point of view. And this does bring up something else. So if we're going to go with Taft here, I think we'd also have to talk about the fact that he was not really that close to 1948 in a sense, because Stassen was actually a lot closer in a sense. Harold Stassen, of course. But overall, I feel as if that I could definitely see Robert Taft in this scenario potentially winning over the Eastern establishment. So I think in 1948, for example, I think the most likely individual to run and win as well for the Republicans, in a sense, with the backlash, would be actually Robert Taft. And I mean, this is going up against an incumbent president, mainly Harry Truman. And this is also a presidential election as well. And when people talk about, for example, Taft-Hartley, I can tell you right now, I feel as if Taft would still do pretty well with the Midwest. And this is keep in mind, this is Union Heartland, in a sense. Labor Union Heartland, by the way. For example, we could look at his home state of Ohio, for example, in 1950. He was pretty efficient, actually, in his 1950 election. So let's just say he ran it like he did his 1950 re-election, correct? I think precisely, in a sense, I think that Robert Taft actually did his best. As a matter of fact, despite the amount of support that labor unions were pushing against him. I mean, in 1938, we see he won by 7%, 44 his reelection. He only won by 0.6%. And then in 1950 here, it went up to 15%. He won by a safe margin. So I feel confident in a sense where we could potentially see, not Robert Taft, maybe win Ohio by 15%, but I think a more reasonable, say, I think in a sense, for example, we see in 1948 that Truman actually won Ohio. I don't think that's happening in this scenario. So, for example, if we're going to have Taft running in 48, I think probably one of the more logical candidates in a sense would probably be Earl Warren, actually, as a matter of fact, because that was Dewey's original candidate. And I'm trying to balance out the ticket between a Midwestern conservative and more of an East Coast / West Coast liberal. So I think that we could also see him potentially influence, say, the election not only in Ohio, which was a close state, but Illinois and California, which, looking at it right here, would nearly bring him to 270, as a matter of fact. But what else do I think he would win? I think he could potentially win rural states, as a matter of fact. So I think we could see, for example, Idaho, which is around 28,000 votes flip. And yeah, I think that's what we might see. I think Idaho would flip, and Nevada as well, too. So that would bring Dewey, or not Dewey, that would bring Taft to 274 to 218. And then, of course, Strom Thurmond's winning the South with 39 electoral votes. So, yeah, I think we would see a Taft presidency in 48 potentially, like just like that. I know, very long. So now what would Taft bring to the office? So I think, for example, one of the things we would definitely see, for example, no creation of NATO. Because in 1949, Taft did vote against NATO off of, I believe, one of the charters, actually, as a matter of fact. So he voted against NATO because he's a well-known non-interventionist, by the way. So do I think the United States would still protect Europe just in case of Soviet invasion? Yeah, I think they would. And same with, for example, South Japan from North Japanese invasion. Because in a sense, it's more so that he was a non – when people say Taft is an isolationist, that's not exactly true. I'd say the more correct term to identify him would be non-interventionist. Another thing, interestingly enough, is that he would actually be our last trade protectionist president up until Donald Trump, as a matter of fact. And that's pretty interesting, if you know what I mean. He would be a trade protectionist as well. I mean, that's a typical Republican standard for that time period, is going into the 50s as well.
So, Nick, I have a question.
Yeah.
So if we decide not to make NATO, right, how do the Soviets respond? I'm assuming no Warsaw Pact happens.
Yeah, exactly.
What would the tensions be on that European border, per se? You know what I mean? Like, would West Germany form still? And then we have East Germany forming and the kind of the Iron Curtain falling down?
Well, I don't think the Iron Curtain would fall down. I think it would still be there. But if we're looking at, for example, how West Germany, East Germany formed, I still feel as if that would happen in this scenario. With West Germany, although the only forming because like there's a common currency and I was moving towards unification, of course. And East right. Germany went into unification, well, not unification, but went into its own sovereign state, quote unquote sovereign state, because of basically as a reaction to West Germany, and that's similar to the reaction of the creation of the Warsaw Pact. Like Warsaw Pact itself was a reaction to the creation of NATO in 1949.
Yep.
And it was more specifically actually in 1955 when West Germany was added into the alliance. So that was how the Warsaw Pact was actually founded, as a matter of fact. So right. I think with no NATO, we would see no Warsaw Pact, most likely. Of course, the Soviet Union would still have influence over them, but there would be no official Warsaw Pact in a sense.
So I wonder how that would actually, like, China changed, you know, kind of the era a bit, the feeling, because now it's under the table, you know, under the books, instead of being flat out on the surface. Would that, I guess, put people more at ease, or would it just cause even more tension, the fact that they just don't see it, you know what I mean?
I think there still would be tension. I mean, even in the 1950s, we see McCarthyism really take hold, as a matter of fact. And in fact, I don't think McCarthyism would really take hold in this scenario. In the sense, is the reason why is that Taft himself was actually he was anti-McCarthyite, actually. He was not a fan of McCarthy, just making unfound claims, in a sense. And this is also – however, I do feel as if – I don't think we would see a lot of the isolationist or – my bad – a lot of the non-interventionist foreign policy implemented from Taft. It'd be more so I think it would be more so headed by Arthur Vandenberg, who was a senator, and who Taft actually on our history actually dedicated a lot of foreign policy to, because he didn't really touch on foreign policy all too much. But yeah, all right. So I think enough about Taft in 1948. How do we think that this new, more non-interventionist United States would affect, for example, Asia?
Let's take Vietnam, for example. So I still think the French would have their civil war with the colony, and eventually it will get out of their hands, and the United States would have to step in and would become a civil war between South Vietnam and North Vietnam. And I still think that would happen, except for the fact that the Soviets have a tighter grip on the continent itself. And with that, I feel that the United States would just feel the need to save South Vietnam. You know, I think we could potentially see somewhat of a DMZ like we see in Korea today. I feel that the United States would just not leave until we can get that some sort of DMZ because of, well, you know, the fact that we lost Korea and Japan is split.
So you basically mean Vietnam. That's basically what Vietnam was, I hate to tell you.
The thing is, when we left in Vietnam, right, they took over Saigon. I don't think we'd allow that.
I don't think we would leave Vietnam. I think in the sense, if you want to make that the Korea of our scenario, I guess you can. But overall, I don't know if America would be even getting involved in Vietnam. Because let's just say there's 4 years of potentially maybe even 5 years since Taft may potentially get reelected in 1952. Let's just say he does. And he would die just a year later in 1953, which means Earl Warren, who would be the Supreme Court Justice, actually, the Chief Justice, actually, as a matter of fact, would be the new President of the United States. So I don't know. I think 5 years of Taft's non-interventionism probably would have done a lot for the United States, shaped a lot of United States foreign policy, similar to how containment shaped the first few years of the Cold War. Containment under Truman shaped a lot of foreign policy under for the next 80 years, actually. Not 80.
So what you're saying is like
60 to 70 years.
So what you're saying essentially kind of like just, you know, keep our troops in Japan as they are, South Japan, and just leave everyone else do whatever they want.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think if the French just let Vietnam go, there's no reason for America to even be there. It just makes no sense. Even if it falls to communism, it makes no sense for America.
But like,
to be
I
there.
Don't think they see like what I was saying. I don't think the French would let them go, and that's why.
Oh, it sounded like you said. It sounded like you said they would let them go.
Oh no! I was like, what I meant was that Vietnam, they call American help like they did in our timeline.
Yeah, but that was after they left.
Yeah, but like to clean up their mess.
Yeah, but I honestly don't think if Robert Taft was in charge, or if his foreign policy was still kind of implemented under Earl Warren, I still don't believe that we would get involved, because I guarantee you, using Taft's for Taft's idea here, right? There's no way he would go for it, or his successor, actually, as a matter of fact, would go for it.
So I guess there wouldn't really be so much of a Cold War, maybe, based on what you're saying. Maybe it's more of like another period of American isolationism, while there was the Soviets were expanding their grip.
Well, I think in a certain extent, I think this, if you want to say Soviets expanding their grip, I mean, they had control over it. And this, at this point, the only enhancement they would get would be northern Japan and all of Korea. Because, I mean, they still had all Vietnam. They still had all China, except Taiwan, of course, like in our actual scenario. Overall here, I mean, like, Taft, for example, I think if we did go with his more non-interventionist foreign policy, right, we could potentially see it mitigated by Arthur Vandenberg and other internationalist Republican senators. Because he was actually more the guy who ran foreign policy actually during the time period of when Taft was really in office during the early Cold War years. Because that's one of the responsibilities he actually delegated, as a matter of fact, here. And really one of the more interesting things here would be that – so I think in a sense – I don't know if we would call it isolationism, but I think because isolationism would basically kind of say, yeah, we're just going to not talk to anybody and just leave us alone. I don't think we would be isolationist. I think more so we would be less willing to get ourselves involved in the conflicts such as Vietnam, in a sense. Rather than going on the offensive, let's just say we'd be more defensive in the Cold War than we actually were.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. I can definitely see that perspective as well. All right, well, that will be the end of this episode of Back to the Past, the Alternate History Podcast. If you did enjoy it, make sure to leave us a comment on Twitter, Instagram, and leave us a review. RateThisPodcast.com/althistory. Or if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Audible, for example, you can type a review directly there. And make sure to follow our socials at Back to the Past P1. And otherwise, have a great rest of your day.